Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. One game down of the three preseason games. The Saints go down to the Chargers 27-13 at SoFi Stadium. And joining us is Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Yeah, it's just preseason football, baby. It just is what it is.
I want to start with this observation, though. All things considered, you know, it was the first game, but this was actually the second game for the Chargers. And when you look at teams, they played in the Hall of Fame game, which I think there's a, you know, big difference having two of these games under your belt or coming in and having one under your belt already against a team that hasn't had any. When you look at the team stats, I mean, the Saints did pretty well, held their own in the stats. They just gave the ball up too many times.
Yeah, I think what the real advantage of having that first game, because, you know, nobody's playing starters, right? Justin Herbert didn't play in the first game, didn't play in the second game.
Sure.
I mean, held out a ton of people. So it's situational football. So forget the score, right? Because it's not a game. They're working on two-minute offense. They're working on two-point conversion, fourth down, stuff you'd never do. So it's about individual play. But the bonus of that first game is that your team, your young guys, have been tackling to the ground and being tackled to the ground. The Saints haven't done a lot of that. You don't do a lot of that in practice. Some, but not a lot. And so, you know, kind of that all the way tackle to the ground in game one, and you get, you know, a lot of younger players that get in games, because that's who played yesterday for them and the Saints. But, yeah, so I think that's the advantage. Because they beat Detroit 34-7. Detroit turned it over like four times. It was like, well, how do you evaluate that game? So I think the evaluation in these games is you look at the individual play, because the game itself, not meaningless, but the score doesn't tell you anything.
Right. So what did we learn? Obviously, we know that there's competition going on at quarterback. It seemed as though Coach Moore played both quarterbacks a lot more than I thought he would have. I know y'all talked about that during the game, and I guess maybe it was just the way the rotations came around and the situations.
Well, Spencer had a lot of plays, right? I mean, so it's not. It's not. Sometimes it's based on drive. Sometimes it's based on plays. Tyler came in at the end of the second quarter, so he got to work the two-minute offense. So, again, that's a situation. Hey, let's see how Tyler does in the two-minute offense. In a game, that would have been your starter. Spencer was 7 of 11. Tyler got to throw it more, because a lot of that was the two-minute offense. He was 15 of 22. It felt like to me, and Deuce talked about this, that it was they both – And Jake as well, they're playing not to lose the job, right? Take the underneath, take the easy stuff. But what happens is the cornerbacks and the safeties just start, they know that. They just start sitting on it. And so Tyler made a rookie mistake, and it ended up being a pick six. And after that, you know, that's when he took a couple of deep shots, the route to Kevin Austin and the pass to Mason Tipton. And that's what we wanted to see, but we really didn't see any of that just beyond those two plays. So I don't think any quarterback, it's hard to say, you know, until you really see. I thought Spencer had a couple of good throws, and he got, you know, they had drops. Tyler had the pick six. Jake actually got hurt a little bit. Not sure. Actually, Tyler, you know, got a bruised knee at this point. We don't know about the injuries. You know, they're off today. It's basically a walkthrough. They won't practice till tomorrow at 4, so it'll be late tomorrow before we really kind of get a hand on Will Clapp, Trevor Penning, Bub Means, and Mason Plein. So, you know, the question is, did either quarterback take a step forward? I'm not sure. I think you're right. They had to, they both played a long time because you got to find out, right? So somebody's got to separate themselves in this competition. Don't think that's happened yet.
I don't know. I've always been a big Will Clapp fan. And when I think he went out, what, play three or something, maybe?
Yeah.
It was so early in the game. I just thinking back to past seasons, I'm like, oh, my God, don't tell me we're starting on this truck again. You know, we'd have offensive line after offensive lineman going out.
Right. So Eric McCoy didn't start. That's what happened to Eric McCoy in week three against Philly. It's like the third play of the game. So, and Trevor, we just don't know, right? And so, but, Torricelli Simpkins, who was like your number four, all of a sudden he's like, you want me to do what? He played like the whole game.
He played like a bandit. He played well.
Yeah. And so the offensive line was everywhere. He had Dylan Redunz playing right guard, right tackle. Everybody was moving around. I mean, so, there were some bright spots. Isaiah Stallberg, Valus Jones, Kendre Miller, Christian Boyd, Kai Kroger. So that's what I mean. I think you start to kind of look at individual play. The Chargers stats to me, what's alarming is that they ran it for 148 yards still, and you knew they were going to run it. That's Jim Harbaugh. And they had the lead. They were going to run it. So when a team tells you they're going to run the ball and you don't stop it, to me, that's still an issue. But, I don't have Chase Young, Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis. I don't have my players out there. So I don't get too up or down. I think part of the issue early on from an offensive standpoint is that you had drives, right? They had, in the first half, they had an 8-play, a 9-play, a 10-play drive that netted 3 points. They also had a 6-play drive after the muffed punt where they turned it over on downs. They got 0 points. So you have opportunities. You have these long, drives and plays and yards don't get you anything. It's points. And they've got to be able to do a better job of turning long drives into points. Other than Eric Rodgers, an all-star game for the Chargers, it was a bad throw by Tyler. But it comes from a first half of taking the easy, short routes and cornerbacks sitting there. Waiting for it. And so you got to make him play honest. You got to throw it deep. You got to let it loose. This is what he did after that.
Interesting to me, I think you're always looking for physicality, right? What was your sense there?
Up and down, inconsistent. I think there were times where I felt like the Charger defense had penetration, a little too much penetration, but, I look at that offensive line and go, that's not my offensive line. And the Saints, I think, had some opportunities for penetration and to make big plays, and it was kind of feast or famine. They either did or they didn't. I thought Christian Boyd, I understand the rule as it's written in black and white, but if that's not a safety, then, the goal line should be like the 10-yard line, right? If that play happens at the 10-yard line and Christian Boyd starts to make the tackle at the 10-yard line, right at the 10-yard line, but he is actually tackled at the 5-yard line, they don't put the ball back at the 10. They put it at the 5. That's where he got tackled. There's no forward progress. He was going backwards. But to say that at the goal line, at first contact, the ball is outside of the end zone, so that's not a safety. But if that had been the 10-yard line, they wouldn't have put the ball at the 10. I mean, the goal line to me should be treated like the 10 and the 20 and the 30, right? It's not like I've never, Deuce and I talked about it, like it's first contact. Yeah, at first contact, the ball was minimally outside the end zone. Well, first contact don't mean anything. Sorry. That one made me mad.
No, I get it. I kind of feel the same way. I mean, you bounce off a guy that slams you, right inside the line of scrimmage, and you end up taking a step forward in the end zone. You get tackled. I like you believe it should be a safety.
Right.
So, Mike, all things considered, when we're looking at this, we have two more preseason games. What are we looking for? And I guess, and I don't know when the timing of the first roster reductions occur.
They don't have them anymore.
They don't have any of that until after the preseason.
They let you keep all 90. They just say, take that, you play-by-play people. We're keeping all 90 for three games.
we really want to test your acuity here.
That's right. But, a lot of them don't play. They just don't tell you who's not going to play. But all those guys that I talked about in that list were all dressed for the warm-ups.
Right.
And then they went in and put on black sweatpants. So I think – first off, they're going to it appears.
So what do we need to show that gives you a level of confidence going into the first game that you feel like we're on the right track?
They're going to have a joint practice now with the Rams, it sounds like, on Thursday. So that was not planned. That's good. You get a lot of phenomenal work out of joint practices because it's like a game, but you do your situational stuff. You do fourth down. You do 2-minute. You do all that stuff, and you're not going to. It's a game with. It's basically a preseason game. I need to see better tackling. I need to see. The one thing we talked about, Deuce and Kellen Moore, is like, I want to see a clean game, right? Well, guess what? That was far from a clean game. It felt so much like last season. 3rd and 19. 3rd and 20. You make a good play. Penalty brings it back. You do something good, but on the other side of the field, there's a defensive holding, automatic first down. It's just so they got to clean it up. They got to clean it up, and it's new. It's a new defense. It's hard to really evaluate when you're not playing your starters. You start looking at, basically you're looking at the draft class, and I want to see one of the quarterbacks have some separation. And maybe that starts with the Rams because that is like a preseason game. I think we're going to see probably in week three, the Denver game. I don't think we'll see a lot of the starters. So you're talking about a Rams practice and the Jacksonville game to make some pretty key decisions about your depth chart and who's going to be where. And so that has to happen in the next, in the next week. The joint practice will be Thursday, and the Jacksonville game is Sunday. The beauty of it is that you get your home. Like the Saints come home on the 15th, and they're back. Jacksonville, Denver, Arizona, San Francisco. Four straight home games, kind of settle in. So I think you don't get too high. From a preseason game, you don't get too low. You don't like the injuries. The injuries, they have been able to avoid that thus far to an extent. But the only reason they're playing the Rams in the joint practice on Thursday is because the Chargers backed out because of too many injuries. That's to me is just a cleaner game and get some separation in that quarterback race.
Yeah, I forgot that the roster reduction now is all the way at the end. I totally forgot about that because that makes a big, big difference, right?
The whole
dynamic changes.
Because they didn't have huge because it went from like 90 to 85 to 80. So you lost players. But quite frankly, this is a better way to do it because when you get to 80 in that week three game and you were at 80 players – you're playing starters, and you don't want to play starters, right? So I think the 90 is definitely the way to go. I think you need to see all of these guys, and you'll see some of the challenge that the Saints have is that it's a new offense, a new coach, a new defense, a new coach, And you got guys like Justin Reed and Julian Blackman, safeties. They've never played together. Right? So you want some. How do you play some, but not a lot? But it's got to be beneficial. Again, I go back to the joint practice. They're going to get, that's where they'll get more benefit out of that with the Rams on Thursday, I think, because you can play Julian Blackman and Justin Reed back there a lot against another team. And it's controlled. I mean, you're tackling, but it's controlled.
It's controlled, right. But yet another opportunity to see what's out there and where people will end up falling out. Great job on Sunday. Look forward to hearing you guys again this Sunday with the Saints taking on the Jaguars. 12 o'clock start time back at the Caesar Superdome. So, in fact, you said, they're going to be home 4 weeks in a row, right? And you guys come back when? Saturday?
The 15th. We fly, they fly back the 15th. We fly back the 15th. So. And they'll do a walkthrough on Saturday at the Dome, I think, and, get in the building. That building is a cavernous, right? Your first time in there. I mean, you need to get in there and see the lights and punt and do some kick returns. And, but then they'll be there, right? With Jacksonville the next day and then Denver and Sean Payton coming to town. So, these are important. I mean, they're just important. Yeah. Not games and records. Last year the Saints beat Arizona in the opening preseason game. Charlie Smith hit the game-winning field goal. What did it mean? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Right.
So, whatever.
Right. No doubt. But it's part of the gig, right? You got the game.
Yeah.
You call the game.
You got to get down to your 53. It's 53-17. Right, so you're not really eliminating a ton of people, and you can bring 17 back to your practice squad. You keep 53. We're not cutting 50 people here. It's an elimination process.
Right.
Some of these guys will be hurt, and quite frankly, you'll see some roster changes. Still, they're going to go out and get some people.
No doubt, for sure. As always, always appreciate your time and your insight. Great job on Sunday. Look forward to this Sunday. Have a great week.
Thank you, pal. Talk to you soon.
Okay, man. That's Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. We'll be right back.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stay with us. Folks, we've been hearing a lot about what's going on in Texas relative to the redistricting and move into special session there, and the fact that a number of Democrats have decided to leave the state to avoid or to defeat a quorum being had so that there's not the ability to take a vote. As such, it is frustrated Republicans, so much so Republican Senator John Thune solicited U.S. Senator John Thune solicited the assistance of the FBI director, Kash Patel, in hunting down some of these Democrats. Is this the role that the FBI should play? Patrick Eddington, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, wrote a blog the other day about America's not-so-secret police. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Neil, it's great to be back with you.
Emotions seem to be running wild. I mean, the exercise of emotional intelligence right now is waning at a record pace. I just kind of scratching my head trying to figure out what direction we're headed in.
Well, I think, anytime you see folks swing towards extremes, and I certainly view Mr. Trump and his movement as being one extreme in the same way that I view Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York and their mayoral candidate, Zohran Mamdani. I view them as just, like another extreme. And when you get that, common sense just, pretty much goes out the window. And I think what's been happening in Texas, is definitely emblematic of that. And You know, look, you know, Governor Paxton or Governor Abbott and Attorney General Paxton, you know, they clearly want to be able to try to find a way, you know, to give President Trump the additional seats that he's basically asked for to try to hang on to Congress. And I don't think they should be doing that in the same way that I don't think that, you know, Gavin Newsom in California ought to be looking to try to undo the nonpartisan redistricting model that they've had there in that state, you know, for several years now. But at the end of the day, you know, this is about power. And it's about, you know, who's going to be able to exercise power and what lengths people in politics are willing to go to get and maintain a grip on power, even if it has the effect essentially of distorting or even essentially trashing the Constitution in the process.
So we know that the request was made, and what was the response from the director of the FBI?
I'm not sure, at least as of today, Monday, August 11th, when you and I are talking, I'm not sure that Kash Patel himself has put it in writing in a public way that they've actually agreed to do this. I think if that had happened, we'd probably be seeing it all over the place. And I don't believe, and I'll have to double check on this, but I don't believe at the press conference that the president held today about essentially taking over D.C. in terms of law enforcement. I don't recall Director Patel making, you know, any mention of that, but I will admit that I wasn't able to see the entire press conference. But in any event, the FBI shouldn't be involved in this at all. I mean, this is literally a Texas state matter. And I hope that, you know, Governor Abbott is not foolish enough to try to send Texas Rangers to Illinois, New York, and Massachusetts to try to retrieve these folks, because certainly in the case of Illinois, Governor J.B. Pritzker has made it very clear he will not tolerate that. And, you know, I'd hate to see a shootout between, you know, Texas Rangers and Illinois state troopers, that would, or for that matter, Illinois state troopers and the FBI. So I really hope that calmer heads ultimately prevail in this, and that the Governor Abbott and Attorney General Paxton, you know, dial it back and find another way to get, you know, a redistricting outcome that everybody can basically feel like is actually constitutional and at least, you know, nominally acceptable to everyone.
But where, I mean, would, you know, I hear this a lot of saying that is constitutional, but I've yet to have someone point out to me where, you know, whether you agree or not agree, where this is unconstitutional to do this redistricting mid-cycle. I mean, a lot of states wait 2-3, sometimes even as long as 4 years post-census to resolve their redistricting. And they've had some examples of it getting caught up in the court and not being resolved till past the mid-cycle of censuses in the past.
Well, I think, you know, where the constitutional nexus comes from in this particular case is any notion that the FBI plays a role in hunting Texas legislators, right? But in terms of when states elect, you know, to try to do this kind of redistricting, I think your overall picture that you painted here tends to be true. But these fights can also involve efforts, and this has certainly been the case in the past, where folks on one side of the aisle or other try to draw lines in such a way as to guarantee a particular outcome for a particular seat or a particular set of seats that runs afoul, you know, of other federal laws. What they're trying to do here in Texas, I think, is really quite clear, and that is they're doing everything they can to try to give President Trump a cushion for the upcoming midterms in order to try to help the Republicans, you know, maintain control of the House. And so, you know, whether or not the specific methods by which Abbott and Paxton are going about this are completely unconstitutional, you know, that's going to be potentially something for the courts. But what it's done is it has basically sparked a new redistricting arms race, you know, for lack of a better term. And I just don't see how in our current environment that is going to be remotely helpful in cooling the national temperature over this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I made this observation the other day. The one thing that's different about Trump as opposed to a lot of other candidates, I don't know that there's any doubt in my mind and a lot of people's mind that when states go about redistricting, that the national political parties are involved. If that party holds, you know, the White House at that point in time, those people are involved. The leaders of Congress are involved. And the goal is always, I mean, just look at Illinois, for example. There's no way you achieve that map unless there's something, you know, going on, right? I mean, it doesn't happen that way. That's not a coincidence. And the same thing in Massachusetts and many other states. I mean, the difference about Trump is that he doesn't hide the fact. You know, I'm sure that Biden and Obama and Bill Clinton and other Democratic presidents communicated with their leadership that this is what we need to do. This is what we need to accomplish. He just didn't say it out loud.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, you know, I think you're right about that.
And that's the caveat that this country, you know, we beg for transparency until we have it. Then we don't know how to deal with it.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, too. Yeah.
What was the old toy? You got it, Toyota. You know, if you ask for it, you got it, Toyota. I mean, it's like you got it. And now, you know, it's out. You know, we're not whispering in the hallways about what's going on. I mean, it's top of the news of every news cycle. You know, and you add to that 24 news cycles a day, because that's about how many there are. I mean, you know, it gets way whacked out and crazy. And I don't know. And that's why I went straight to emotional intelligence, because that's the only thing that can bring you through all of this, with some semblance of structure and order and, you know, exercise of common sense, as you said earlier.
Well, I think, you know, whenever the political process turns into a zero-sum game where it's all strictly about power and who has power and who's going to be able to wield power and potentially do things to folks that are in the minority, and I mean, you know, millions and millions of voters, you know, who don't necessarily agree with, you know, with a given program. Whenever we see efforts essentially to try to do that is when, you know, we really run the risk, I think, of seeing things very much spiral out of control. And I think, not sure if you had a chance to get any updates on the president's press conference this morning with respect to the District of Columbia, but, you know, he's invoked Section 740 of the Home Rule Act, basically claiming that there's, you know, this giant crime wave in D.C. And Newell, I'll tell you, I've lived in the D.C. suburbs here in Northern Virginia for nearly 40 years. And when I got here in 1988, the homicide rate in D.C. was just under 400 a year. By the next year, it was well over 400. And by 1991, it was almost 500. As of today, there have been 99 homicides in D.C. And that's a 12% decrease, you know, from last year. So, you know, I think what the president is doing, especially here in D.C., is just more performative politics in a lot of respects. It's going to cost the taxpayers more money because he's calling up 800 to 1,000 members of the D.C. National Guard. There's going to be a lot of overtime for federal and D.C. police, you know, so that's going to drive it up. But the idea that, you know, there's some kind of, you know, massive crime wave that's sweeping across the District of Columbia that requires this is just simply, you know, not true. I mean, it's just not factually accurate. But, you know, this is a stock and trade for Trump. You know, he's a very, you know, tough on crime guy. He wants to maintain that kind of posture. He wants to continue to send that kind of message. That's what they did in L.A., even though there really was no need to call up the California National Guard, much less 800 Marines down there. But, you know, it's obviously a template that they're using. And the president said this morning that you know, all but said that Chicago's next on the list. So I don't think, unfortunately, that things are going to calm down the way that you and I would probably prefer to see them calm down.
Yeah, you know, and this, I don't think this conflates the issue, but I think a lot of it is, you know, what we're doing to try and circumvent one another. You know, the establishment of sanctuary cities relative to immigration enforcement, whether you believe that what they're doing is the right thing or not, is almost a separate issue. The moment in time where state and local governments trying to figure out a way to circumvent the authority of the federal government, which it's clear that immigration enforcement historically has been, you know, federal purview. And so when you begin to see this, you know, that this is where everybody's doubling down, you know, and you're right. It's not going to be a positive thing in the end by any stretch of the imagination. And thus far, it hasn't been. Other than when they focus on what they do, like what's going on at the border, you know, there wasn't a lot of interaction. Yeah. They just set about under their authority to do what they could do, and they did it. And now we have incredibly positive numbers, you know, at the border for sure. As always, Patrick Ennington, thank you so much for your time, your insight. We appreciate it, sir, for joining us, and have a great week.
You too, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Patrick Ennington, senior fellow at the Cato Institute. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. I really want to thank the New Orleans Hash House Harriers, the folks that put on Red Dress Run. I was the guest starter for that race on Saturday. Got to meet a lot of great people. Want to thank Bill Healy and Mel Dussel with the Kiwanis Dawn Busters. I really want to thank all of the volunteers out there of so many incredible organizations that put that on. There were definitely way over 3,000 people that were participating in that run, and who knows how many were down in the quarter that were just down there in red dresses. But I tell you what really shocked me more than everything, really two things. Everybody was just so kind and conscientious. I mean, I saw people that, you know, picking up garbage and putting it in the receptacles, and I thought that was great. Everyone was like, said, thank you. You're serving food. You're serving drinks. Very, really nice. But what really surprised me, the people that travel here from out of town to participate in Red Dress Run. Met several people. And Mel was telling me about that every year, more and more folks have got people that come. I mean, they have people that have been coming for 10 years to participate every year in Red Dress Run from all over the place. Talked to a lady from Austin, Texas, another couple from L.A. That came in. I mean, and it was just amazing how many folks come in to participate, and then a lot of the folks go to Dirty Linen Night on Saturday night. Just another win-win for the city. The quarter was packed all day long. The weather was phenomenal. I mean, it was warm, but it wasn't the 95, you know, degree, feel like 110 warm. It was just a lot of fun. Everybody was in red dresses, which was great as well. So we had a great time. I just want to thank all of those folks. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. All right, folks, when we come back, we are going to visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the U.S. labor market. We'll talk about the divergence between our U.S. central bank rates and the rest of the world. And I think you're going to be surprised by a lot of the differences there. And also how the New York economy actually affects elections and the national party. There's a lot going on there, a lot of uncertainty as it relates to the New York elections with the socialist candidate that's running there and has a lot of people really freaking out about what the downstream implications may be of SANE. And we'll probably be talking about that more through the end of the week, because things are really starting to materialize as to where he stands on a lot of these issues. And in fact, he has put Trump front and center and said he will be going after Trump every day, all day. Interesting. We'll be right back with Guy Williams.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.